This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. It is another episode of the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, and what a busy week we've had. Ita Karanka, Kenny Jackett and Lee Bowyer all left their jobs. Bowyer to take Karanka's at Birmingham City. Congratulations were in order for Salford City, who won the 2020 Papa John's Trophy Final, and 24 hours later handed it over to Sunderland, who were this year's winners. And in Scarborough League 2, Walsall unveiled a commemorative third kit for next season with the names of all the fans who declined season ticket refunds embedded in the shirts. Well done all, it's the official EFL podcast. So loads going on across the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two, and who better to help us go through some of the key stories than the former Wimbledon, Luton Town, West Brom, Aston Villa, Leicester City, Birmingham City, and now Derby County defender Curtis Davis. And it is customary in these moments when somebody is out with a sort of longer term injury to say, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I'm cracking on. I'm doing a lot every day, so it's not quite as boring as it was at the start, where, you know, I had the big boot on, I couldn't really do a lot. Now I'm cracking on with a lot of things. Obviously, can do things on 2 feet. Some things I can't do fully weight bearing yet, but I'm pushing myself. You know, whenever there's something that I find too easy, I'm always going to the next level. So yeah, I'm definitely not getting bored. Long hard days in the gym. Usually I'm in there from 10 till 3 and don't come out, but I enjoy that because it means I'm working in the right direction.
But when you've had as severe an injury as that, this is your Achilles, was it actually snapped or was it torn or severed or what was it?
Mine was clean. Yeah, mine was, basically one part was up here and the other part was down there. I know it's audio, but it was fully separated.
Okay.
There were no fibres attached, and that's why when I explain to people, some people that have severed their tendon, it's agony because all the nerves are still attached and everything like that. Whereas when I've done mine, the initial pain of the impact is what is painful. But then after that, because usually my nerves go with it, there's no pain. So I was quite, shall I say, fortunate in that sense.
But it's therefore been refused. And I think if I was in a similar position, I would be very nervous that it might pop again. So do you gradually stretch stretch your toes upwards to give it a little stretch slowly but surely? Because you're talking about pushing yourself hard. Are you not frightened that suddenly you go too far and it just goes and all the stitches or whatever they've put it together with, in your case, probably pieces of bionic Achilles and things, snap?
I'm not worried, no, because I'm still following protocol. When I say I'm pushing on to the next level, I'm not jumping through hoops and start running because I feel like I could jog. It's none of that. It's just if I get told to try the 10 kilogram weight and it's too easy, I'm going to go for the 15. I'm going to go for the 20. That's what I mean in terms of I'm trying to push on and trying to get myself going. But in terms of redoing an Achilles, my left Achilles, which I did the first time, I did that in 2008. And basically, once you do it, your Achilles is that thick because of the scar tissue. It's almost impossible to redo it because the scar tissue makes your Achilles even stronger and more binded. So when I did my second Achilles, which was my left again, it wanted to go, but it ended up coming off around my heel. So the base of the Achilles, literally the last point on the base of my bone of my heel, is what came away because my Achilles was that strong, it couldn't rupture. So it therefore pulled away from my heel. So that's why it wouldn't go again. But I'm definitely not going to test it to see if it wants to. But yeah, I'm just working on strengthening. I'm trying to get my range back. I'm slowly getting a bit more strength in, you know, tiptoe walks and things like that. And hopefully soon I'll be able to, you know, get on a, we've got an air pressure treadmill where you can run at maybe 50% body weight, stuff like that. Hopefully I can get to the point where I'm actually running on there rather than the walking I'm doing at the moment.
You're listening to the British Medical Authority's weekly podcast. Next week, we'll be dealing with Duane's retraction, which is a condition of the eyes. On a more serious note, I thought that you seemed to cope psychologically with it quite well. I'm sure you had your down moments in that first week or so, but we were texting each other and I think we spoke a couple of times. In stark contrast, how is poor Bradley Dack feeling? I mean, heartbreaking for him. Another cruciate knee injury just as he's coming back and getting back to full strength from a year out with his previous ones, Curtis. How do you cope with that?
It's devastating. We've had the same with Christian Bielik, a similar situation that, you know, you go through a year out, you work hard, you start getting yourself back into the team, starting to get yourself back to somewhere near where you thought you were as a player. And then lightning strikes the second time. And, you know, it's devastating. A player like Dak, who has often been touted as the next one to jump from the Championship into the Premier League, would have been looking, you know, to one, to help Blackburn turn things around for the rest of their season, but two, to get himself going. Unfortunately, you know, he's innocuously again, obviously he was closing down the keeper, and his knee went. So it's terrible news, and I can only send my best wishes to him. I don't know him personally, but I really rate him as a player. And yeah, it's just a shame for football when somebody works so hard to get themselves back and that happens. But it's a cruel game sometimes.
It is. But you can just imagine him sort of lying there. This happened in the Friday night game. You can just imagine him lying there and thinking, goodness gracious me, all the hard work I've put in to sort of rebuild myself both physically and mentally, and I've got to go through it all again. I mean, it doesn't bear thinking about, Curtis.
No, I think from my experiences personally, when I have an injury, I try and focus on any positives, not necessarily football positives, anything in my life that can be positive to take my mind away from it. So me, you know, getting this injury now, yes, 35 years old at the time, get a serious injury, coming up to the end of my contract, but I look at it, you know, family's healthy, get to spend time, Christmas at home, so things like that, little things were ticking me over in my mind. I think for Bradley Dack, he needs to look at it, and not necessarily always because of monetary, but the fact he signed a three-year contract. Yeah. He's got the security of, yes, the money side, but it's not so much that. It's the fact that he'll have enough time in that three-year contract to come back from this injury, get himself right, and show just how good he is. Because sometimes the worry is, if you're running out of time on a contract, the temptation is to come back slightly early and try and earn yourself another contract. But luckily, he can take his time with this, make sure it's right again, and hopefully we'll see a very good Bradley Dack when he comes back again.
At the top of the Sky Bet Championship, Norwich City look, to me, uncatchable. Please speak now if you disagree with me.
I will not hold my hand up.
Well, we've been through the all it's audio, not video, so don't put your hand up, for goodness sake. We're still trying to work out how long that is as the gap in your in your Achilles. Watford, starting, I mean, second best points accumulation since Boxing Day, since the arrival of Cisco Munez. 8 wins out of 9 and actually starting to look very good on the field as well as having that momentum that you need, Curtis.
Yeah, obviously, the thing of what I said about Watford is they've been able to win without doing too much. They almost look like they could have another gear. And I think when you've got that, it's got to be worrying for the teams around you. You know, Brentford, having obviously watched them yesterday against my side, they looked in the first half like a team that could have steamrolled us. But then once they took their foot off the gas, we managed to get back into the game. Whereas, you know, when I watched Watford, they're very unassuming, very, very, shall I say, dare I say it, ordinary. But they've got players within their team that can turn the game at a flick of a switch. And they've got good players throughout their team and in their squad on their bench. So I think the way that Watford are doing things seems to be, you know, if they really need to go and push, I think they can get more wins if they really need them. But at the moment, they're winning just by, you know, turning up, doing the basics, and they're taking results. So I think Norwich are uncatchable, as we just spoke about, but Watford are making a great fist for that second place.
Yeah, and on the subject of that, I sort of had a little bit of a look ahead for that battle for second. Penultimate fixture is Brentford against Watford, and then the final round of fixtures, Watford against Swansea. I mean, you couldn't script it, could you?
No, I did see that, because when I was looking at all of the run-ins, I think it's Watford, technically, or if you go by on paper, have the tougher run-in. I know they need to play, I think, five of the top seven, maybe. So that's obviously going to be difficult. But the way they're playing, I wouldn't bet against them winning those games. I think Brentford on paper had the easiest run in. But if you go by on paper, you know, as I said, yesterday's result against Derby County, having watched them in the first half, like I say, they could have been 4-0 up and were cruising. And then for them, they didn't come out in the second half, and they were hanging on in the end. So I think they need to give themselves a bit of a wobble to make sure they keep them out of it. But Watford, whenever I've watched them throughout the season, they've not necessarily been exciting to watch, but they've been very, very workmanlike and just very organised in what they do. And the thing is, when you've got a team that can score goals, I know Dini's injured at the moment, but Andre Gray come back, started scoring goals, Saar scores goals, João Pedro, they've got goals through the team, but yet you're still keeping the clean sheets that they're keeping and defending the way they defend. It's going to be a tall order to knock them out of that second place.
Mind you, Brentford can score goals, can't they? Ivan Toney is now, well, in the last week, he's got his 26th and 27th, both from the penalty spot. You were obviously at the game when he scored one against you guys. I mean, I have never seen such a cool player when it comes to, as he says, passing them in the net. That's his sixth and seventh conversions, hasn't missed one this season. I saw an interview with him on Sky Sports after the game at Blackburn. He said, do you get nervous with penalties? No, I just wait for the opportunity to pass it into the net. Now, on the one hand, you could think, cool, you're a bit cocky, you're waiting for a little bit of a tumble there. But then you see him execute it, Curtis, and even as an opposition player, you have to just admire it and purr a little bit, don't you? It's extraordinary to watch.
You do, because it's one of those types of penalties where if he's to miss one, on the day he misses one, he looks too cocky. Look at him. It's a bad penalty. But because he scored so many, you know it's his style. I had Nathan Ellington at West Brom, and he had the most calmest, most casual penalty I've ever seen, where he would literally almost do a little bit of a stumble towards the ball, slowly lift his foot up, and then the keeper will go one way or the other, and he literally will, as we said, pass, and it will be about 2 yards either side of the keeper. But the keeper's already moved that way and they can't get down. And he never missed. So I'm saying, the day that you miss one, you look abysmal. Like the old Panenka, you know. Score Panenka, you're lauded around the game. Everyone thinks it's amazing. But as soon as you miss one, oh, cheeky, you tried to take the mick. So I think you have to appreciate these players and their techniques, because Toney knows what he's doing. And like I said, from his record, the keepers don't know what he's doing. So that's the main thing. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, there was, just as you said, Panenka, there was a slight child screeching in the background. Did you set up one of your children to make that noise bang on cue?
I think she's a bit excited about the Panenka. She's not even in the room, so yeah, I don't know. She's having a little sing-song to herself. I think dinner must have been nice.
Yeah, fine. I think that's what it was. Listen, I'm just looking now. Glenn Murray holds the record for championship goals, 2012-13 with Crystal Palace. He got 30. Ivan Toney's on 27 now. I mean, he's going to break the goal scoring record for the division, isn't he?
He should do, but it's also to remember that he's top of assists as well. So if you've got somebody that, you know, usually you look at a striker, selfish striker, that's why he scored so many goals. He slayed on 11 assists. Now, and there was one against, I remember that there was one in the away game against Brentford where he laid it on the plate for Mbeumo, and I was on the line just waiting for him to burst a net, and he missed it. So he would have had another assist. So he's definitely a player that, when you worry so much about him scoring, and you maybe overly cover him from scoring, he still finds his teammate. That's a threat. And that's why he's getting so many goals. Because of Brentford's goal threat throughout their side, that's the strength, that anybody can score for them. So therefore, you pay too much attention to him, then he'll pass it to someone else. And if you don't give him enough attention, he'll score. And, you know, he's been fantastic this season. And what I like is his confidence. When you talk about him talking about his penalty, when he signed from Peterborough, or when he was on the verge of signing for Peterborough, there were a few Premier League clubs after him. And he was, yeah, I'm ready. I believe I'm a Premier League player. I want to play at that level. And if I don't get there, I'll make sure that eventually I will be there and I'll show how good I am. And, you know, if you're watching that, he's coming from Peterborough in League One, you'll think, who is this kid? If you don't know him, if you don't know him as a player, he's gone to Brentford and he's done exactly that. So whether or not it's with Brentford, I believe he'll be in the Premier League next season, because there's no way this guy can be held back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a Premier League club cannot not sign him based on what you have just described. Shall we discuss some of the managerial changes? One is at one of your former clubs. Ita Karanka left Birmingham City after a 12th home loss of the season, the worst in the Championship division. They've only won 9 at St Andrews in their last 42 matches. I mean, we had Ita Karanka on earlier in the season on the official EFL podcast. He said the owners had learned their lessons about chopping and changing, but there just comes a point, doesn't there, where you have to make a move. You have to try and preserve your position, however much you are committed to the sort of long-term vision and have faith in the person that's currently in position.
Yeah. First of all, I blame Coventry for that home form since they've been playing at St Andrews. It seems to have been going downhill for the club. But Ita Karanka came in, big promise, having, you know, had a side promoted before, been successful in this league, knows the league, brought in players that he knows, but it's just not worked. Ultimately, whether it's a combination of the quality isn't enough or the way he wants to play doesn't suit the players in the team, I don't know. You know, I haven't got as many of the people that I know there anymore, but it was a very difficult time for them this season, and it's disappointing to see that, you know, they're still in a dogfight. You know, Lee Bowyer's gone in there, former teammate of mine, of course, at Birmingham. But he's got a tough ask. You know, their first four fixtures are Reading, Watford, Swansea and Brentford. Now, if you talk about baptism of fire, that is it. And obviously, it's a job where he's left one troubled club and he stepped into another. But the one thing I will say about Lee Bowyer is he's a fighter. He's ready to put some pride back into the club. He's played for the club. He's won a trophy with the club. So he knows what level this club can reach. So I think if you're talking about troubleshooting and right man at the right time for the job, I would say Lee Bowyer is the right man. But yeah, it's going to be a tough task. But on a personal level for him and for the club, I hope it works for them. But not at the detriment of my Derby team, of course.
Of course. Is there any danger with you guys that once you hit the sort of points tally that you do have and you're now up to 40, that the foot comes off the pedal because, you know, the crisis is not staring you absolutely in the face? Do you think players psychologically, having been under a tremendous amount of pressure, Derby must not go down, they're an enormous club, suddenly sort of when they do feel that little bit safe, just let it off a bit?
I think it can go two ways. I think sometimes when there is no pressure, you play a bit more relaxed, you express yourself a little bit more and sometimes get results from it. Because if you're playing against teams that need something and you're quite relaxed, it can be that, yeah, you could lay down and end up getting beat 3 or 4. But there's other times where if you've got the expressive players and they're willing to try things knowing that almost it doesn't really matter right now, or you give young lads debuts that are hungry to go and prove themselves, it can go the other way. So I think as much as, you know, it can step down a bit, I think sometimes, yeah, if you play against the wrong team when they're under no pressure, it can be a real problem.
The other managerial change was Kenny Jackett leaving Portsmouth. He'd lost 5 of his last 7 league games and the 2020 Papa John's Trophy final to Salford City on penalties. He has won promotion or reached the playoffs in 5 of his last full seasons managing in League One, but lost in the playoffs for the past 2 seasons with Portsmouth. Was there an air of inevitability about that, do you think, Curtis?
I think so. It was the league where none of the top teams seemed to want to run away with it. Every time one of them got in front, another one would falter and things like that. And Portsmouth were the ones that faltered, but then kept doing so. And I think, you know, the positions that they've been in over the last few years, obviously a couple of trips to Wembley, losing in the playoff semi-finals last year, it's been really, really difficult for them. It's a team that believes it should be in the Premier League themselves, let alone the Championship, because of what they've had in their recent history, and they feel hard done by with what happened with the financial situation in the club. But first and foremost, they need to get it right this year. So I think it was important to make a change now. Hopefully for them, they'll get that manager bounce and it'll give them a little bit of a lift. And even if that means the playoffs for them, they still need that lift before going into it, because there's nothing worse than, even if you make the playoffs, faltering into it rather than being a team that have got form. And I think that's what Portsmouth have maybe gone along the lines of, because they're not far, obviously, what is it, 3 points that they're outside the playoffs. So they're still in a great position to do it. But I think it was a key change to make now. And I think sometimes as a manager, maybe Kenny Jackett, maybe in his own mind even, might have thought he'd done all he could at that football club.
Couple of EFL initiatives that I want to talk to you about, or rather it's a wider initiative that is part of the EFL's long-running Not Today or Any Day campaign. This weekend is the International Day for Elimination of Racial Discrimination. In light of all these recent cases of players being subjected to racial abuse, just how important is it that football keeps coming together as a community, supports these kind of days, just to show that this behaviour is simply not acceptable?
I think it's massive. I think to just keep hammering home these ideas about educating yourself on different cultures, on different people, on why different people do different things in their lives, it's really important. And obviously, we're going through a very strong time where racial discrimination is right at the forefront of everything to do with football. You know, sometimes there would have been a game where somebody might have won 3-0, 4-0, fantastic game of football. And we might be talking about the racism that a player received afterwards. And that's the shame that the world that we're living in at the moment, that football isn't necessarily the top talking point of football at the moment. Racism's become a bigger talking point a lot of the time. So we want football to be football. You know, football knows no colour is the oldest saying in the book. And we want it to be that. And I think it's important that, you know, the EFL and the PFA and Kick It Out and everyone, we keep having these initiatives to keep hammering home the idea. And hopefully, you know, one day we will be able to live in a world where we don't have to be talking about these things anymore. And it's just another day rather than a special day for it.
Is it discussed a lot in the changing room?
I think right now, it's almost unfortunately expected, and that's sad to say.
The abuse is expected. We've reached the stage where footballers expect some of their teammates, you, whoever it is, to be abused because of the colour of their skin. That's the point we've reached right now in football.
That's what I believe, because not necessarily us Championship players, with all due respect to us, but I mean the ones with high profiles that have got 3 million, 4 million followers on Instagram, on Twitter. I just feel, you know, if Manchester United lose a game tomorrow or whenever they play next, they lose the game. All right, is it going to be Martial? Is it going to be Rashford? Is it going to be Pogba? Is it going to be, who's going to get targeted today? That's kind of, unfortunately, where the mindset sits at the moment, because it's so easy with these social media platforms. I could literally go on now, make a fake email address, make a fake profile, send a message within 3 minutes, and you'd never be able to find me because I'm not verified. And as long as you're able to do that, there's always going to be people that will be willing to go out there to do that. And sometimes, unfortunately, the way the world works as well, some people will be doing that to get a buzz. So if they're spoken about from messaging Anthony Martial or Marcus Rashford or Ivan Toney, who's recently been a victim, and then they're spoken about in the press, well, their account is spoken about in the press, they could be nudging their mates and going, oh, look, I got in the papers, that was me, yeah. And that's the shame. I think that's where it's kind of going, that people are using it now as a way of trying to, they know it's something that will affect and hurt a player. You know, you can call them every name under the sun, it's not going to do anything. But as soon as they mention colour, they know that's going to cut right to the core, and it's people are going above.
But wait a second, you're saying this is above one individual in the heat of the moment. If you're saying that one person celebrates what they've achieved in notoriety with other supporters, with friends of theirs, you're saying we have an endemic problem of racism that goes far deeper than a heat of the moment reaction where somebody hideously, obviously, but nevertheless chooses the colour of somebody's skin to try and claim some sort of victory themselves. You're saying it's really deep rooted and en masse.
I would think so, because like I say, not a lot of them are brave enough to do it from their own account. if it's a reaction of the moment, you say something that you later regret, then I'm not saying that's definitely still racism, it's not right, but they've been bold enough to say it from their own account. But these people that go have the time to make these fake accounts and then go and do it, for me, there's something more in it. Because if you're willing to go to those lengths just to tell somebody that they're a black this, a brown this, a green this, a whatever this, then it is more deep-rooted. Because like I say, if somebody reacts to something like in football as such, if somebody kicks you and you react and you kick out, then that's obviously not the right thing to do, but that was heat of the moment. These people that end up, somebody puts something on their profile from their own accounts, they say something terrible, terribly racist, wrong thing to do, totally wrong. I'm not saying, again, I'm not vindicating the fact that it's a reaction to a bad performance. It doesn't make it any better, but they've had the guile to do it from their own account. Whereas the people that, like I say, take the time to set up an account, do this, do that, for me, you've only done that for one reason, to get a reaction. And unfortunately, too many of them are getting reactions because we're obviously doing the right thing by reporting these things. But yeah, these things keep coming out, and at the moment, it's hard trying to see where they end.
I can't leave it on that note with you. So we've got to talk about a more positive story, and that is we need to pat all the EFL clubs on the back, don't we? Over the course of the last year, since we headed into the first full lockdown, EFL clubs en masse have distributed 1 million food parcels and made or received in excess of 500,000 telephone calls from the vulnerable amongst their supporter base and wider communities. That is magnificent, is it not?
I think that's fantastic, because talking about one bad subject to this fantastic subject where you talk about communities coming together. That's amazing, because I had the joy of speaking to an elderly gentleman that had been given an iPad by Derby County, had to be taught how to do FaceTime through the window because they couldn't obviously enter his house. So the community guy was outside the window, like trying to point to the thing that he needs to press and stuff like that. It was incredible. But I got to speak
and then
to
his
him.
Reward when he finally managed to do it, the first person he sees is you on the
exactly.
other end of the line.
Poor him.
But, yeah, I was about to say, mate. That's I thought the club were trying to do him a favour, not scare him.
No, but it was brilliant because things like that. He could then FaceTime his grandkids, his great grandkids, his kids that live in America. So things like that, when communities come together, Marcus Rashford has been lauded for everything that he's done, but these football clubs as well that have, given up their stadiums for testing or for vaccines and every little thing that everyone's come together to do at difficult times for everyone, especially football clubs as well, for me, it's just fantastic. And that's what football's about. Football is community. Football is sticking together, getting through tough times. And I'm glad to think, touch wood, there's light at the end of the tunnel. We're finally coming through these tough times. And unfortunately, most of our clubs are still standing.
Your fixtures this coming weekend in the Sky Bet Championship. Early kickoff, 12:30, Brentford at home to Nottingham Forest. 3 o'clock, it's Barnsley against Sheffield Wednesday. Norwich against Blackburn. Reading against QPR. Derby travel to Stoke. It's Watford against Birmingham, 3 o'clock, Curtis mentioned earlier. And it's the South Wales Derby, 5:30, Swansea entertain Cardiff City. Good luck with the ongoing rehab. Thanks for joining us, Curtis.
Thank you very much. Speak soon, Joe.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Scarbet League One Rochdale are going through a tough time at the moment as they battle to avoid the drop. It's times like these that a club needs their fans. And in the absence of their physical support on the terraces, the community spirit and bond has never been more important. And in the case of Rochdale, they're going the extra mile to honour one of their super fans who sadly passed away last year, as fellow supporter Mark Cryer joins us to explain. David Clough, you have lost a very special and well-known fan, Mark.
Yes, that's right. Cloughy, as you affectionately known, he was what you'd call a super fan for Rochdale Football Club, just with the sheer amount of money he collected doing the local football lottery over the years. He collected for the local lottery for over 25 years, and at one point, he had over 800 members on his round, which had to physically knock on the door and collect the pounds off them. And he never drove, did David? So everything was done on his bike. So he was a well-known face throughout the Rochdale and Littleborough area.
Wow. So he's having lots of conversations about his beloved club as well, if he's turning up on people's doorsteps.
Yeah, I think he was like the face of Rochdale Football Club as well. I think a lot of people who probably never even went to watch Rochdale still had a connection with the club just through Cloughy just knocking on the door and talking about the games and stuff.
And I guess that's a very important part of the club, isn't it? You know, that there are those lines of funding from those perhaps little known sources on a national basis, just the people who are as dedicated as Cloughy.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, over the course of his life, the club have worked out that he raised over £500,000.
Wow.
Just by knocking on people's doors and collecting the pounds here and there. It's quite incredible, really.
Yeah, it is. So it was your idea to set up a Just Giving page and to raise the necessary funds to honour his legacy. Do you want to tell us how you're going to do that?
Yeah, well, I've got a good friend of mine, Bren, who goes to watch Valencia quite a lot. And I read an article on them there where they honoured one of their super fans by immortalising him in bronze and actually placing him in the stadium so he could be there to watch every single game. And I just thought, wouldn't it be incredible if he could do something like that for David?
Wow, what an idea. I don't think I've heard about that before. So just to be absolutely clear, this would be a life-size statue, what, sitting in the space where a seat would be, or
yes,
standing in the corner, or where would it go?
No. It's going to actually be on David's seat, the seat he had in the main stand for the last, 25 years. And we're actually then going to retire his seat. So David will be sat in his own seat, watching Rochdale for the rest, well, however long it is.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, this is so radical, isn't it? I mean, I would suggest that football fans wouldn't do this for absolutely anybody, because if they did, they'd soon find their sources of future income were being exhausted a little bit. What's the response been like amongst supporter groups?
Oh, the response has just been absolutely incredible. The football family as a whole have really took it on, and thanks to social media and stuff, we've been able to reach out to fans of other clubs. And we've had donations from clubs up and down the country, clubs like Charlton, Portsmouth, even our local rivals, Bury. A lot of their fans have donated as well.
And what kind of money do you need to raise, and how far down the line towards your target are you?
Well, first of all, I hadn't any ideas really, so I just set it at £2,500. And then I got in touch with somebody that said they could cast one in fibreglass for £10,000. So we rechanged the figure to £10,000, which we've now reached and slightly passed. But in the meantime, we've been contacted by a local sculptor who's got a close family member who's a Rochdale season ticket holder. And he said he's prepared to cast the thing in bronze. So Cloughy's actually going to be immortalised in a bronze statue.
So we're back to square one. We're back to the original idea. I mean, I have no idea about the difference between the cost of a fibreglass statue. I can't believe I'm asking this question. The cost between a fibreglass statue and a bronze one. I mean, is the local sculptor doing it out of the goodness of their heart? They're putting their time in. Do you need to raise even more funds?
No, it's what it is. It's a little bit more, not substantially more, but we've had an anonymous donation by somebody who said they will make up the shortfall. So between the sculptor doing a little bit and this other donation, we've actually reached what we need to actually get the sculpture done in bronze.
What a fantastic tribute. Thanks to Mark for telling us the story of David Clough and all he's done for Rochdale Football Club. What a fantastic way to honour his legacy with a statue inside the ground. We look forward to seeing it unveiled and wish everybody at Rochdale all the best for the rest of the season. Your Sky Bet League One fixtures for this coming weekend: Charlton head to Wimbledon, Doncaster go to resurgent Gillingham, just 2 points off the playoffs now, Gillingham. It's Rochdale against Peterborough, Shrewsbury entertain Hull, and Sunderland against Lincoln is third v fourth.
This is the official EFL podcast.
They only turned professional in 2017. Two promotions via the playoffs led them into the EFL for the first time in the history last summer. So how are Harrogate Town enjoying life in the Football League? Let's ask Simon Weaver, one half of the father and son duo who own and manage the club. And I guess my question is, at what point does this feel normal, Simon?
I guess when the fans return and we are able to visit these stadiums that we've already visited, and it's not echoey around us. You know, the fans' voices resonate, and our own fans are in the away end as well as when we're at home. It's packed out crowds, and we're loving, you know, the bigger audiences that Lee 2 bring. But so far, we've enjoyed the journey, and it's been great, albeit it's strange in every way this season.
Yeah. I mean, have you had some pinch yourself moments? Have you had a couple of quiet moments where you and your old man, or you and some of quite a lot of players have made quite a substantial journey in a short space of time, have gone, holy hell, where are we? How did this happen? What are we up to here?
There have been moments like that, to be honest, because it's important that, you know, I think we can all get over intense about things at times, because, you know, we're ambitious, and you're in football because you love it, and you're trapped in a passion somewhat. But we're all hungry to keep on striving. But there are times where it's been important to get some kind of perspective to it. And yes, there's been some moments where I've pinched myself thinking, you know, we've just gone away to Bradford City and won, and what people are now calling the local derby, and yet we've never played these before. There have been leagues ahead of us. And Exeter away, we won 2-1. And Southend away was our first ever league game. We won 3-0. And you're thinking, hang on a minute. You know, 3 years ago, we were lining up basically with the same team in the Conference North. So it's, there's been definitely some moments where you think, wow, this is really happening.
I mean, has the stretch of several of individuals surprised you? Did you think that, with the greatest of respect to them, the leap would be too great and you would have had to change more than you have?
I thought, looking at League Two games last year, I knew it would be a step up, and there's been times where it seemed a bigger step up than at other times. When we've been able to keep the core fresh, as in the start of the year, we're running on adrenaline, standards were really high, we were chomping at the bit, we were mauling teams in terms of energy. But then as the adrenaline wore off and the just relentless nature of this league crept up on several players, understandably so, because we'd never had a break last season, then we did need a bit of freshness in the building. But more to protect that core and to give it some padding to the squad so that they could come back with a vengeance, and that's what they have done since the turn of the year, and we've had a really good run recently. But in terms of their capabilities of stretching to this level, I've been not surprised, but just delighted that they have been able to step up. You know, 7 out of the 11 from Saturday and last Tuesday's game. Last Tuesday would be Colchester, and we narrowly lost on Saturday to Forest Green away, who are in the top three. 7 out of the 11 performed 2 years ago in the National League North. So it makes us very proud that we've still got that core to the team. And it doesn't really surprise me, because they've done it together.
I mean, you had that flying start, but then you did seem to hit the buffers a little bit. Was there a kind of reality hit somewhere along the way, or were there other factors coming into play?
Yeah, it was around the time we got knocked out of the FA Cup to Blackpool, and we suffered for the first time actually in a few years, since really being a full-time team, a few injuries to key players. Because we've had a cracking run in terms of the injury list, and yet for the first time it's happened to us, it's been in the Football League, and down the core of the team too, important players were missing. And it was probably the quality, the depth of squad in key areas wasn't really up to EFL standard. And so we had to, the latter months of the year, November, December, were crawling over the line in order to increase the depth of quality in the squad. And, you know, I said to a few key players, you know, bear with us, we will be stronger. We'll protect you boys. And, you know, if there's one or two injuries to key players, we'll be able to ride that storm if indeed it happens again.
I mean, listen, you know, when we do get back to the football normal, and my first question to you kind of related to when does being assimilated within the football league seem normal, but when we do get back to normal, as in COVID's over, fans are around, what a great, great weekend away your place is going to be for fans from far-flung places to come and stay in the area or stay and have a night out in Leeds or stay in Harrogate itself and just experience something a little bit different. I mean, I think one of the things you must have loved across the course of being in the league, isn't it? It's just the diversity of the sort of geographical places, the makeup, the sort of social structures of the places you've been to. I mean, there's all sorts of communities embedded around their clubs in Sky Bet League too.
Oh, well, 100%. In fact, there's less travelling in League Two compared to the previous league, National League. But in terms of, you know, the different, like you say, diversity of the areas, the places, we always have a pre-match meeting. We can't have meals at the moment in hotels locally, where we, unless we stay overnight. But everywhere's been dead. You know, everywhere's been absolutely silent apart from when we've turned up. And so that is a real contrast to, compared to what it will be like. And so we're looking forward to being in these buzzing towns and different places and different experiences. And you do miss turning up at the big grounds. Can you imagine, you know, turning up at Bradford City or Bolton Wanderers as a Harrogate Town coach pulls alongside you, you know, full of fans experiencing those stadiums for the first time. And it will be exhilarating next season. We just can't wait for fans being allowed back in to enjoy that experience and for us to enjoy the experience of them being with us.
Right, here we go. Here are the questions you got around the start of the season. You and your dad, who got there first? Paint a little picture of how the first of you got involved and then the other one got involved. I know I've asked you some of these already, Simon, on one trip to see you for Football Focus, but for the benefit of listeners on the Official EFL podcast, give us the detail.
Yes, yeah. So I joined Harrogate Town in 2009 under the chairman, who was Bill Fotherby. And I was there for 2 years before Bill, who was in his 80s at the time, and had a fantastic life in football with Leeds United as managing director. He just said, look, we're going to resign two leagues and go two leagues below into Unibond League at the time, unless we can get a new owner. So I'm approaching your dad because I've heard he's in business. And so that was the start of it. And of actually my dad being involved with the club. And obviously he wasn't just going to donate hard-earned money into a football club. He said, well, you know, I'll take proper ownership then. And I'll give my lad, you know, me a chance to stake a claim, really, in for a prolonged journey in management. And we've both been here ever since. So my dad's been here 9 years and I've been here 11 years.
Yeah, and there's so many different versions of how I could ask these questions, but, you know, arguments between you, have there been many? You know, have you ever been close to leaving? Has he ever been close to getting rid of you? I know you've heard all these before, but these are the things that people kind of ask. But then having met the pair of you at the same time, I don't know. I mean, you don't seem as though there's a harsh word between you, or am I wrong?
No, we're lucky in the fact that we do see eye to eye, and he has been a great manager in his own right in his own business. You know, from building his way up in a building business to in a family business to being chairman, and I've seen the way he manages people, and he's managed me as chairman to manager. And I've learnt a great deal from him. So, you know, the experience of managing a lot of people in 11 years, I've thoroughly enjoyed. But he's been excellent to me. And it's not about just financing the club and it being a hollow feeling of, well, this guy's just in charge because he's dad and they're just ploughing money into it. As I've proven already, we've got players who've been on this journey with us who have, predominantly played Conference North football, And so I think that's proven that they've been developed as well, and they've developed themselves at our football club. But there's been one or two moments, you know, Boston away 7 or 8 years ago, we were 3-0 down at half time on the back of a bad run, confidence really in a bad place. And I've looked up at him, I thought, oh, I don't want the flak for him. I can handle it myself, but pointed at him about our relationship. We went in at half time. Fortunately for me, we turned it round, we drew the game 3-3. And I was close to choking up after when I saw him, because I thought, well, I hate that feeling of putting him in a really awful position because I'm not doing the business. But we've progressed, I'm pleased to say. Only one other moment where, one moment really, and it was quite funny, but I just had my second child, but I'd had an operation as well. As a grandparent, he managed to pick myself up and my little boy to go to a soft play area, and just he was a real little one, and we just thought, well, we'll have a coffee together and he can go with the, you know, those little ball areas, and I couldn't drive, so he helped me out. But he was straight onto me within a mile about the plane budget I've gone over, and I was saying, no, just give me, my shoulder was killing because I'd just come out of this operation the day before. Anesthetic was just really knocking me out, and I just said, just give me a break. Son's in the back, I've had an operation, and we're talking about just a few hundred quid over a budget. And he said, well, yeah, okay. It was just really intense just that day, but overall I can't complain, you know, because he's been fantastic, he's stood by me, and I hope at least he thinks now with two promotions that I've stood by him, and we've worked well together.
Yeah, I suppose the only thing is, I'm guessing, I mean, you're the longest serving manager, aren't you, in English leagues now. I mean, I suppose the thing is, you must be ambitious and people will be looking at you because of what you've achieved on the football field. But do you feel a bit hamstrung by the fact that you can't really leave your dad behind should an opportunity come up, or that might leave him, you know, in charge of it, or just leaving him behind as a family member? You know, all these things must kind of swirl around you occasionally, don't they?
Well, of course they do. I mean, I've not been in that situation yet, though, where someone's actually said, oh, yeah, you know, would you like a pop at it at a level where, you know, we've not been yet? You know, I've not been, or my management team haven't been.
How do you think you would react? Because you've got, I mean, I guess you've got a kind of control of your own destiny situation at the moment, you know, haven't you? Some people like that feeling of sort of being enshrined with the things and feeling part of the furniture and all that kind of stuff. So would it take a ginormous opportunity for you to go, Simon?
It would take a good opportunity, but then I could always be accused of just staying in my comfort zone if I don't drive myself on, if there was an opportunity that was a proper opportunity. You know, I wouldn't jump at something where I thought that's not a stable club. It won't allow for a 3 to 5 year plan to go ahead, or whether, you know, if I was just a puppet, you know, and just not really picking the team or not involved in the recruitment for the team, as have been the cases in some clubs, I'd have to find out the ethos of the club and whether that fitted with my ethos. Because one thing I've got at this club is control of the football setup from the juniors up. I'm head of football at the football club, and then I allow people to run their own departments, and we get on because of that. And I think we've grown as a really, really close-knit unit because of that. Now, I might not have that. And I know you've got to relinquish control in departments and in setups, but yes, it'd be an interesting question to answer if a stable, really big club came at the right time, and at a time when I thought that Harrogate couldn't go in, if we reached a point where we can't grow anymore, whether that because of fans aren't coming or we haven't got the facilities to go again.
Very diplomatically handled. Final question. When I came to see you, I think Gareth Southgate, who lives in the area, had stuck his head around the door a couple of times. Have you had any more trips? Has he kept the dialogue up, or is he too busy preparing for World Cup qualifiers, etc.?
Well, he is immensely busy, isn't he? And he's got bigger fish to fry than me. But I haven't spoken to him for some time. But the last time, obviously, was before the playoff semi-final. And he was good to his word. He came over, had a chat with the players, which is an immense experience for us all. And but no doubt, you know, he's a thoroughly decent person. And not many people probably will appreciate that actually when you see him face to face, it's just how you would assume him to be. And so that's a compliment to the character he is. But, you know, well, no doubt I'll drop him a line and he'll surprise me by texting me straight back, which he often does, which is, as I say, is really good of him to say he's at the top of the game and we're just in League Two.
It's not a bad little extra to be able to spring on the boys occasionally, is it? Especially, but don't tell him either. Just let him sort of pop up, especially ones who haven't met him before. Saturday's fixtures this coming weekend. Early kickoff is Newport against Leyton Orient. It's Barrow who have won their last three to lift themselves 5 points clear of the relegation zone at home to Crawley. Bolton have taken 29 points from their last 33 at home to Walsall. Cambridge against Forest Green is second v third. Third. Cheltenham against Salford is first being ninth, just 9 points between those positions. Harrogate entertain Morecambe, and Tranmere against Exeter is fifth against eighth. Little bit too big a stretch even by Harrogate Town standards for you to make the playoffs this season, do you think, Simon?
It may prove to be the case, but I think it's a big game actually on Saturday. You know, we're sat 8 points behind seventh, and this is who we play, Morecambe, who are sat in seventh. And if we can eat into that, then we may have a chance. But even if it does go wrong, it's in our nature just to keep on going, and that's what we will demand from the players, you know, to finish as high as we possibly can. And you never say never, dear.
Wherever you end up, well done in your first season in the Football League. Lovely to talk to you, Simon.
Thank you. Lovely to speak to you too. Cheers.
That's it for this week. A big thank you to Simon Weaver, to our Rochdale fan Mark Cryer, and Curtis Davies. If you enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.